Well, welcome everyone to our session 19. Hopefully everyone is in the right space, investing in our future, budgeting, planning, and philanthropic strategies for school choice. My name is Dave Cook. I'll be the moderator of this session. My background is church operations and stewardship and diocesan appeals. I'm currently the finance council member of our parish on a volunteer side of things, and like many of you are, well, presumably most or all of you here, trying to crack the nut of school, parochial Catholic education, strategic planning, and fundraising. Our speakers today are Angela Gunderson, president of Meitler, a Catholic teacher and principal turned strategic planning consultant. So Angela will take us through the first part of our talk today with the strategic planning and budgeting. And then Dawn Handworker from Rutolo, who is now heading up their southeastern region of the U.S., helping, again, schools with philanthropy. But I will let them give a more detailed introduction of their of themselves. But for now, if we could get out the Catholic Stewardship Prayer. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen. Loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to your Son's life and ministry and to answer the call to be his disciples. May our response be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities, and may our stewardship flow from a profound sense of gratitude for your many blessings. By the gift of the Holy Spirit, empower and inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask this in his name, who is Lord forever and ever. Amen. All right, I'll pass the mic over to Angela.
All right, good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. As mentioned, we'll share a little bit more about ourselves and what we do, but really want to focus on what you see up on the screen here. So we won't spend too much time with introductions, but just to give you a little bit more formal, as mentioned, career in Catholic education, former third through eighth grade teacher, was director of curriculum and instruction, and then was principal of a K-3 through eighth grade Catholic elementary school in the Archdiocese of Milwaukee in Wisconsin, prior to joining Meitler. I first joined the Meitler team in partnering with FATICA and NCEA, for those of you that are familiar with those two groups. But we piloted a program in mentoring Catholic school principals around the country in developing metrics and enrollment management. So that was kind of where I got my foot in the door, and my passion for Catholic schools allowed me to branch from my 70-student Catholic elementary school to being able to work with schools on a more national level. So we'll share a little bit more about that in a minute.
We're supposed to use this microphone, so we're going to be going back and forth. So I'm Dawn Handworker. I'm vice president of Rutolo. We're a fundraising consulting company. We work nationally. We're based in New Jersey. Our headquarters is in New Jersey. That's where we were founded. I run our Southeast regional office. I'm in South Florida, but we do work nationally. So, you know, that doesn't, our airplanes are a great thing and take us everywhere. My background is really varied. I started in the corporate world out of college. I was in corporate sales and marketing for about 15 years, took a little detour and opened a retail store. And that was really fun. And I did that for about 10 years. And then I had a studio for another 10 years. But through my retail store work, I found my way into philanthropy, doing a lot of benefit work in philanthropy. I went to Catholic high school. My kids went K through 12. I obviously was a Catholic school mom, so did lots and lots and lots of fundraising at the Catholic school level. And then I ended up working in their high school, which was a great co-ed St. Joseph High School in Trumbull, Connecticut, co-ed, very strong Catholic school in Fairfield County, Connecticut. So I did development work there for about 4.5 years, went to a museum in Greenwich, Connecticut, so have worked on the institutional side, so I understand it really well, and then was blessed to find my way to Rotolo. And now we work, probably 75% of our business is in the Catholic world. We have a church division. We also have a secular, what we call secular division, RANP, but that the secular side houses schools. So Giving Institute, the way they characterize philanthropy, schools are not considered under the church side. So between our church work and the Catholic schools we work with, probably 75 to 80% of our business is in the Catholic world. So we know it really, really well. So that's my background. And then I just shared what we do. So we work with all nonprofits, a lot in the Catholic Church. Actually, George Rotolo, who started our organization 45 years ago, we were the first firm to do pre-campaign or feasibility studies in the Catholic world. Churches weren't doing them then. You know, back then, pastor, bishop would say, we need to raise this much money, and off you would go with some success and maybe not success. But now we actually try to help provide data and details of what you actually can raise so that your projects are successful. We also do campaign management after the pre-campaign study. We do major gift solicitation. We help with volunteer training. We do stewardship and increased offertory. So we do anything around fundraising in the Catholic world. We're here to help with. And Angela's going to explain what Mitler does.
And I'm going to stand back here and make this a little bit easier. So as mentioned, we are two separate companies. So that's where you're kind of seeing the split. But Mitler's focus on strategic planning. I heard the word data come out of Dawn's mouth, and so I want to continue to stress data, data, data. It's one of the things that Mitler is most known for, our data and demographic research and analysis. We've been partnering with the Catholic Church for well over 50 years. And as we have kind of return, repeat customers, clients now, what we're hearing is, man, what you told us 15 years ago, it actually happened. Okay? So we'll share a little bit more just about why that data is so important in understanding how you're planning for the future. So strategic planning is kind of our larger umbrella. The data and demographics align directly with that. When we focus on our topic for today in terms of budgeting and planning, none of these operate in silos. So you're going to hear a little bit about multiple areas of school life, because if we're working on enrollment, well, that impacts our budget. That impacts our academic programming. That impacts our facilities all the way around, right? So it's a very comprehensive look at how do we make sure that our schools are financially viable long-term without so much reliance on some of the historical areas where we're getting most of our revenue from. The reason we're here together, we are housed under the same holding company called Collegium. It is a holding company that works and brings on, we are for-profit companies working with nonprofits. Okay, so that gives you a little bit of a sense of who we are. But strategic planning, more often than not, leads into the need for philanthropy, fundraising, capital campaigns, things like that. So because we work so much in the Catholic Church, and Rotolo does as well, it made sense to kind of try to promote this seamless process from what we call planning to philanthropy. So we'll talk a little bit about kind of what that looks like. But I'll hand it over. Dawn's going to actually start with her section kind of on the philanthropic side, and then I'll tie it into what that means from a larger strategic planning perspective.
Awesome.
That's right. Sorry, go ahead.
No worries. They're recording these, so we have to make sure we're always in a microphone. You know, the topic today is school choice and how we look at the umbrella of school choice, the trends, what's happening in school choice, and how that affects budgeting and best practices, really, in Catholic schools. So, you know, this continues to be a hot topic, and it does affect your budgets immensely. So how many of you are in states with school choice? Great. Awesome. And how many of you are in states that are considering school choice? Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So I'm in Florida. We've seen a lot of impact. About a year ago, the Florida legislature changed our need-based school choice program to a universal school choice program. I work a lot in the Diocese of Venice. They have seen, last year had a 9% increase in enrollment. And I was just speaking with the superintendent last week, and he is anticipating finding they've had an additional 8% in enrollment this year. It is unbelievable what's happening in the state of Florida with students moving to Catholic schools. But all schools are doing better. I'll tell you a little bit of a story. So when Florida started school choice 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago, it was under Jeb Bush. There was a national test that was given. It was only given in 36 of the 50 states then, and Florida was 34th out of 36. So that's when school choice was implemented. Today, that same test is given in all 50 states. Florida is now 4th out of 50. I don't believe any public schools have closed in that process. It has, you know, that rising tide raised all boats, and the students are who are winning. Right? Our kids are who are winning out of that process. So there's a lot of discussion. The teachers union fought really, really, really hard in the beginning to get it shut down, the program. They lost at the state Supreme Court level, so they have there's no more recourse for them. This is staying forever. Whether universal will stay forever is a different story. A different legislature could come in eventually and change universal. We don't think it will take away school choice in any way, but it could change universal school choice. And that's, you know, sort of yet to be seen. But we're going to talk a little bit about sort of funding and where that, you know, the reliance on that money, right? Okay, so what are the trends? So currently there's 29 states plus Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico that utilize school choice programs. So this is growing. This number is growing. This number is growing. There's 12 states now that offer some universal, some form of universal or fully universal. So that number is higher than it was last year. And there are three main vehicles for school choice in the country currently. There are a few more, but they're not as mainstream. Tax credit scholarships that allows a donor, any donor, private or corporate, to make a donation to a nonprofit organization, which then funds those donations to schools and sometimes to children, mostly to schools, who benefit, and then the kids benefit from those programs. So those are run through nonprofits. For example, in Illinois, which they shut down their program in December, but Big Shoulders was the name of the nonprofit, the most prominent nonprofit that was funding that money out. Vouchers are what we have in Florida. Each parent, and it's based on zip code, each parent gets a certain amount of money depending on, it's county. Depending on the county they live in, each student gets a certain amount of money based on their county. I can tell you Diocese of Venice averages about $8,000. It's right around $8,000 a student. I think back to the K-12 experience with my children, and if I had $8,000 per kid every year, I told my kids they need to move to Florida when they have kids. But it's really, so basically it's, the legislature looks at what it costs to educate a student in Florida. You do not get all that money as a parent. It's about half in the Diocese of Venice in that area. It's about half of what it costs to educate a student. But then you think about how efficient our Catholic schools are. And yes, it doesn't cover all tuition, but it covers a lot of the tuition. And we're educating children in the Catholic world at a much better ROI than the public schools are. And then education savings accounts, students withdraw from a public school. They get money from the state, a predetermined amount of money. This is a tricky one. People get it very confused with college savings. They think they're like putting money into a savings account. So people are not really thrilled with this. I need to change the name of it or something because it gets complicated. So this is a trend. This goes through 23. It's interesting, this chart starts in 1991, which is sort of known as the beginning of the voucher program. Our school choice in the United States, the first program was actually in 1869 in Vermont, and it was called Town Tuition. So that actually was the very first school choice program in the United States. But in 1991 is when this trajectory started, and Wisconsin where Angela's from, is actually the first modern school voucher program that came to be in the United States. And also in Minnesota, the first charter school started that year. So this movement has been around for a while, but it's really taken off in the last few years. So you can see tax credit scholarships are the most common and biggest around this country right now. Vouchers are second. And then that you can see how small that education savings account block is at the bottom. So what are the actual trends? Some states have more than one option. So that's why these numbers don't add up to 29. So 21 have state tax credit scholarships, 6 have state education savings accounts, 10 and District of Columbia have vouchers, and then 2 states have tax credit education savings accounts. States to watch. So Colorado, Kentucky, Idaho, Nebraska, South Carolina all have either pending legislation or the potential for a ballot initiative this year. It's interesting that a lot of these governors are against it. So there's going to be a fight internally within the states. I know in Colorado there's some very prominent Catholic philanthropists meeting next week to work really hard to get that passed in Colorado. Illinois. I have Illinois with our dots. So, you know, Angela's going to talk more about sort of the very detailed, data-driven funding side. But Illinois is a cautionary tale. Illinois had their tax credit scholarship program for, I think, 7 years. It ended in December. Legislature pulled it out. 4 Catholic schools in inner cities in Chicago were set to close by the end of January. I think a couple of them were some angel gifts came in and kept the school open. But those are the kids that it makes a difference for, right? Like those are the kids this program exists for, to get them out of their zip code. So they were reliant on that money and the school closed. You know, that very big check that comes from the government, can make your fundraising seem not as important. And it's really, really important that we keep the budget of the school strong and understand that that money may not be there forever. You know, one of the schools that I work with in Florida, the board wanted to raise tuition by $8,000. They're like, why can't we just raise tuition by $8,000? Parents now have this $8,000 bonus check. And we're like, okay, good. Then what? Right? Like, what if it's not universal anymore? How can you do that? Parents are going to be furious. Right, you can't. So they're certainly raising, their percentage of increase is higher than it's been in the past. But you can't just go flip a switch like that. As you all know, your parents would not be a fun next day after that announcement came. And then pretty exciting news on a national level on September 11th. There was an announcement out of the House and Ways Means Committee. Two congressmen are sponsoring a bill, Adrian Smith from Nebraska and Burgess Owens from Utah. So it actually passed out of committee, a tax credit scholarship national school choice program. It is going to the House for a vote. So that's huge. It's the first time in the United States that's ever happened. So keep your eye on that bill. And it won't affect any state programs. This would be a national program where individuals and corporations could make a donation and get tax credit. You know, and where that is helpful, so how Illinois worked, I was working with the Christ the King School in Austin, Cristo Rey School. And so if somebody wanted to give the school $25,000, Illinois was a 75% tax credit. So they could donate to Big Shoulders $100,000. That would go to the school. And they would get $75,000 back in tax credit. So they were really only doing that $25,000, but the school was getting $100,000. So this is where these programs are incredible. Okay. So the importance of philanthropy, right? So we're talking about revenue, how school choice affects that revenue, that money coming in. So what are some of the challenges that you all face when it comes to revenue in your schools? Where's your revenue coming from? What does that look like? Yeah. Tuition. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Donations.
Yeah. Absolutely. No. And that's a whole another conversation we're going to have shortly. Yeah.
Do you have scenarios that involve tithe as well? Parish, the school's tithe from parish, so what revenue comes from a portion of the tithe to parish?
Yeah. Do you have revenues of that? She has examples. She'll have examples of that. Absolutely. Yeah, so these are, you know, what you all said, right? So tuition gap, expenses exceeding revenue, right? Building reserves, financial stability. So how many of you have a tuition gap? So tuition gap, if you're familiar with what that is, cost of, you know, educating a student versus tuition. So how many of you actually have tuition gap? Yeah. How many of your parents do you believe know your school's a nonprofit? Parents know that? That's good, because I just had a conversation at a high school where the athletic director who was doing rogue fundraising never thought about that the school was a nonprofit. It's fascinating, right? He came from public school. Fascinating. So these are the things we have to consider, right? So what we have to do is create a culture of philanthropy in our schools. Have any of you heard of that term, culture of philanthropy? Yeah. So, you know, what is it? How do we create it? What are the impacts? This should be a conversation that you're having with your parents and your alum every time you get in front of them, right? Especially back to school night, open houses, right? Like, we are a nonprofit. Tuition most of the time does not cover what it costs to educate a kid. How many of your parents know you have a tuition gap? Those that do, right? Most schools don't talk about that. You should have a tuition gap recovery program at your school. You should be telling your parents, not to scare them, but to be transparent. Most will pay it. It's shocking. If you do a tuition gap recovery program and ask them to fund the difference, once they know that's the case, those who can usually do, which immediately helps your budget, right? So it's transparency. It's making sure that we are sharing with parents what it costs to educate their children. Tuition doesn't cover it. Most parents have no idea, right? And that time, talent, and treasure are all important. Right? Not everyone can give funds to the school, but a lot of them can give their time, and maybe they can give expertise. Maybe they can be on a board, right? So it's not just money. We want to make sure we're creating a culture of philanthropy, of giving back. Whatever that looks like for a family is fine, and we celebrate all of it, right? We celebrate however they can give. We want to celebrate that with them and thank them. And never make them feel not enough because they're not giving money, right? We always want to celebrate that because the volunteers and the people who give their expertise, it's interesting. Once they feel loved and thanked, money usually follows if they have the capacity to do it. Any questions about that? Okay, great. So, you know, about 10%, or how much you should raise in a year through philanthropy should be about 10% of your budget. That's a really good benchmark, best practice number to think about. So that's what your development team should be tasked with to raise in a year. And how do you do that? You should be doing an annual appeal twice a year, spring and fall, right? It should be segmented. We need to be asking for a certain amount of money when you send that letter out. Thank you for giving in the past. We hope you'll consider a gift of $150 based on your past giving. Right? You want to ask for a certain amount of money. If you just send a letter and say, please give, it's not nearly as effective if you actually ask somebody for an amount. Events. So we want to be strategic about our events. You know, a lot of people come in and say, oh, let's just not do those anymore. I am not a fan of blowing up events. They usually are really sacred to a school. They have tradition. People love them. They look forward to them. But you want to make sure you have some ROI. Right? You want to make sure that they're valuable. For the amount of time that goes into them, you want to make sure they're valuable. Friend raiser events are great and fine. They fill your fundraisers. So it's fine to have fundraisers, intentional events that you know you're not going to make money at. It's perfectly fine. But you want to really try to get as much revenue out of your events as you can. Create a formal tuition gap recovery program if you don't have one. Super, super important. And again, my experience is most parents appreciate knowing that because they, if they don't, they find it interesting to know. Yes. Yeah, so if you have a tuition gap, right, whatever that tuition gap is, if it's $2,000 a student, you talk about it, right? You in the admissions process, you talk about it. You talk about it at the beginning of the school year. You talk about it when they're doing paying their tuition. You explain your tuition does not cover what it costs to educate a student. And you ask parents, if you can, we would love, you know, we're requesting, we're inviting you to cover that difference, right? Yeah.
You run into ways that you have to phrase that program to avoid any tax complications in terms of paying tuition versus donation?
It is tuition. So, so they're basically funding the difference of their child's tuition.
So no charity.
Correct.
Yeah, not for that. Unless someone's doing an angel gift, then it would be a deduction. Right? Yes. Yeah, it's a tuition gap recovery program. It's not a fundraiser.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Right. Yep, exactly. It probably can be argued both ways.
Can you just repeat the first before what you said before?
Oh yes, so the question was is the money that would be coming in to cover the difference going to general operating or going directly to that child? You know, and I think that's a great point. Mm-hmm. And I think it depends how you structure it and how you're asking it to be set up. Yeah. Budget. Full total budget. Yeah. Yeah. You're welcome.
Repeat the question when you hear it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. The question is what percentage of the budget, how do you set your fundraising goal for the year? And it would be 10% of your total budget. If it's part, she's going to get to that.
We have a Q&A. We want to get to that at the end so we can.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, Giving Tuesday, we highly recommend you participate in it. If you're not, people are conditioned to give that day. So take advantage of their gifts, end of year reminders, and then thinking about major gift programs. Most of our schools are not doing that. You know, you can get a really big gift and maybe give up some of your other fundraising that you're doing. That's so much time if you're developing major gift donors. And so just, you know, sort of to wrap up my piece is, how do we optimize potential philanthropy? Like, what is the biggest thing that is holding you back? And what do we hear from donors? It's that they're never asked. They're never actually asked for a gift because most people, if they're asked, will respond. So I'm going to turn it over to Angela so she can dive in to her piece.
All right. I'm going to get into a little bit more of the metrics that align with this. Okay. So when we talk about a few keywords, I just want to point out. Number one is that first word in our title called investing. Okay. When I talk about parishes, I am not going to use the word subsidy because I don't believe in the word subsidy. It is an investment. And we are going to talk about what percentage of revenue should come from various revenue sources. Tuition and fees, parish investment, donations, all of the above. Okay. What this leads to is what we deem operational vitality. Okay. Schools and the model in which our schools were developed, I'm going to say it. It's old, it's outdated, and it's proving to no longer work in the way that it used to. When parishes were built, Catholic school popped up right next door, right? And parishioners, they donated, they tithed. So to this tithing point, the way that that structure was developed, tuition was minimal, right? Because as long as you were a parishioner and you tithed to your parish, we could keep tuition low. And guess what? Salaries were just about zero because we had religious running our schools. So as the structure and the foundation and the organization of our Catholic schools has changed, our funding model has not kept up. I think we can all agree with that. School choice is one component of that. Okay. When we work with schools in strategic planning, we also do new school and expansion studies. We build it in from the beginning that the school must be financially viable on its own without so much reliance on parish investment dollars and or government dollars. So what does that mean? That means endowments. That means having a development advancement program, okay? So we're going to talk about some of those metrics, but the foundation of what I want to talk to you all about today is building that foundation from a data-driven approach. What metrics are you even looking at within your parishes and schools to understand, do we have a tuition gap? What is the tuition gap? How do we communicate that? How do we bridge that gap? So all of that comes hand-in-hand in building and developing operational vitality in our schools. Let's try that again. All right. So number one, what does it mean to have a healthy Catholic school? Okay. Through our 50 plus years of working around the country, we have actually developed metrics that outline some of those foundational quote unquote best practices. Well, through our years also, we've determined that best practices cannot be defined for all schools. Okay. What are best practices? What are best metrics? It's what works for your school. Okay, so you have to understand how to build and develop and analyze the data so that your plan aligns with your realities, okay? But excellent Catholic schools have a comprehensive plan. Raise your hand if your school or parish has a strategic plan, an active strategic plan. And some, now I added that word active, and that's what made the hand start to go like this. Having a plan, we have one, right? Do you implement it? Is it a living document? Is where the hand starts to kind of come down a little bit. Raise your hand if your parish or school has an advancement plan. Okay. How about an enrollment management plan? Identifying specific goals, enrollment targets, strategies. Remember, enrollment management identifies four things: admissions, marketing, recruitment, and retention. Do you have all four of those actively built into your enrollment management plan? Based on a compelling mission. That word mission, we had a staff retreat actually on Friday, and we started talking about, in strategic planning, we developed goals around Catholic mission and identity. And what do you think we hear most often from parishioners and Catholic school parents? Yeah, we have a statement. We have a mission statement. Yee. First question is, do you live it out? Is it incorporated in all areas of parish and school life? So at Mitler, we've decided that we're going to start shifting that language from mission statement or Catholic identity to Catholic culture. We're developing a Catholic culture within our parish and school, and that mission statement has to be lived out and understood by all. Communications, marketing, enrollment management, and development. So I mentioned that there's various pillars that lead into operational vitality for schools. These are certain metrics that all Catholic schools should be gathering and analyzing. And when you're looking at enrollment management, what's your enrollment by grade in your current year? What's your trend history? What are your retention rates? More often than not, that split to double section grades, there's a metric involved in knowing when it's the right time to do so. And I say that because number one, a waiting list is a great, great thing. Okay? When our schools are struggling with enrollment, we tend to, we have to open the doors, we have to get butts in seats, right? That is never the right answer. It impacts your culture. It impacts your climate. It impacts the academic programming. Your teachers are going to get really frustrated. Okay? So understanding when to split, but also financial viability. We're here to talk a lot about budgeting, right? So when is it the right time to split to a second section or a third section because the tuition coming in from those students is automatically going to start paying the salary of that teacher, right? That's the first metric we have to look at. Average class sizes, pre-K retention. We hear all too often, yeah, they come for our preschool and then they leave and go to the public school for kindergarten. How do we have in our plan specifically how we're going to retain pre-K into kindergarten? Percent capacity, we use it as a staffing metric. What percent of capacity is your classroom, not your building? Meaning, how many empty seats do you have? How many students could you take tomorrow in each grade before having to hire a new teacher? That's where our enrollment management plan needs to start, okay? That's money that we're getting $0 for those families right now. Do we have opportunities to offer a little bit of a scholarship or quote-unquote discount to get those students in and keep them. The other one is financial responsibility. So these are metrics that we gather and develop and recommend all schools and parishes do the same. Revenue by source, and I'll break down what our recommendation is in terms of what your revenue by source should be. Again, Dawn talked about cost per pupil, understanding how to calculate the cost of education per child. Teacher-to-student ratio, endowment, surplus and or deficit, teacher salary. This one you all know. This one is a massive, massive challenge. We work with schools to try to get to at least 80% of the public school district salaries. We also have a national teacher shortage right now. 80% is kind of the benchmark. Well, it's low for some and some are matching. Ideally, you're matching. But sometimes when we go into a school and say, okay, what's public school salaries? You should be offering that. And they go, you're crazy, right? What's the reality? So again, these are all pieces though too that have to gradually change. Please know that it, like Dawn mentioned, oh, we can now charge $8,000 more for tuition. Well, fine. But what's your financial plan to get to that point? So that again, you're not now losing all of the existing families that are enrolled. All right, so some of the metrics. You're gonna see that the years on these, NCEA does not gather this data or collect the data the same way that they used to. So we're working at Meitler to try to update these numbers, but this at least gives you a little bit of kind of a scope and a view of what's happening currently in our Catholic schools and what should it be. Okay, so we look at national averages, but here's kind of a breakdown of those different revenue sources. We have tuition income, right? What percentage is coming from tuition and fees? What percentage is coming from, there's that word. I wanted to take a red marker and just cross it out, but we left it. Parish subsidy and or parish investment. School fundraising and endowment, okay? So when we look at these, we've got it broken down also. You'll see not too much of a difference, but where you see the most difference in elementary and high school, number one is that parish subsidy, right? More often than not, it's the Catholic elementary schools that are receiving funds from the parish. Fundraising is about the same. Interestingly enough, the endowment, low, higher in our high schools. We tend to find that our universities do this well, right, in terms of development and advancement. We all know, you see tuition posted on a university website, you're not paying that, right? High schools do a pretty good job. Elementary schools do a terrible job. And that's part of the struggle that we're dealing with now. Parents are trained in their mind that whatever that tuition price is on the website, that's your out-of-pocket cost. So we have to shift that thinking and that mindset and understanding what opportunities are there for families to lessen that out-of-pocket cost. And these are some of the areas that we're doing so in addition to what we're seeing in school choice. Our recommendation at Meitler when we look at tuition income, at least 70% of your revenue should come from tuition and fees. Okay? That's kind of a baseline, a metric to be able to work from. Tuition should move toward the actual cost per student. Again, regardless of any tax credit scholarship, choice programs, things like that. Tuition should go up 3 to 5% every year. We understand with COVID, some froze it. That's an anomaly. Don't freeze your tuition and don't ever, ever, ever reduce your tuition. Okay? It's also a value proposition. Look at your tuition metric to the schools in your area, the other schools that families are looking at. If you're also quote unquote the cheapest, well guess what? You're also viewed as being cheaper and lesser quality. Something to be said, as I mentioned, about waiting lists. Parents just assume, oh, it's the Catholic school. My kids can get into the Catholic school. You tell a parent no and they go, right? There's an understanding of there's something going on there. My kid can't get in. Generous tuition assistance, and our metric is that internally funded should not exceed 8% of your gross tuition revenue. So make sure you're looking at how much are you bringing in tuition, how much are you giving out in tuition assistance. Make sure that what you're giving out from the school is no more than 8% of your gross tuition revenue in what you're being able to give out in tuition assistance. Parish subsidies. Yes. Go back? Sure. It's the same table, just highlighted, different highlighted rows. Who had a question? Okay, no worries. All right, so when we look at parish investment and or subsidy, like other ministries of charity and justice, Catholic schools should not always be expected to be fully independent financially. I spoke about that, and you'll say, but you said you work with schools to be financially viable on their own. You're right. But we also believe that parishes should always invest in our Catholic schools. The money should be used differently. Right now, how many of your parishes are funding that deficit, funding that gap? That's the challenge, right? So we need to work on updating our funding model. Parishes should still continue to invest in our Catholic schools, but that's where it should go towards scholarships, tuition assistance for families. If, how many of you have a parishioner, non-parishioner tuition rate or a Catholic, non-Catholic tuition rate? Our recommendation on that also would be to get rid of that. Have one tuition rate where tuition, again, starts working closer and closer to the cost of education. Some schools set tuition at or above the cost of education. Guess what? Now that's a new revenue source. Number one argument, it does not cost us any more to educate a Catholic student or a non-Catholic student, a parishioner or a non-parishioner. Again, that's an old model. Those that are filling out the paper to get the parishioner rate, unfortunately, that's what it's turning into. Yes. Yep. So this is where, again, if we have one tuition rate and it's as close to the cost of education as possible, sorry, the question was, I saw it. I knew you were going to do that. The question was, what about families with multiple children? One tuition rate is ideal. And again, then the parish dollars go towards scholarships and offsetting the out-of-pocket cost for families with multiple children. We have to set the standard and the bar at the top. Right now, if you have a deficit between tuition and cost of education, every family is getting a discount from the beginning. We can't sit here and say that not a single family in our parish can pay the full tuition amount. We're not even positioning ourselves to have that revenue stream coming into our schools. Every parent is starting off with a discount. So if we have one tuition rate, Catholic, non-Catholic, parishioner, non-parishioner, here's the argument. If I'm a parishioner, are my tithing dollars making up for that difference in cost of education to the tuition amount that I'm paying out of pocket? More often than not, the answer is no. Okay? So in terms of parishes, we look at percent of what's coming in. I thought so. I have a separate slide that breaks this down too. Percent receiving, 80% of elementary schools receive a parish subsidy, 52% of high schools, 69% of K-12. There's the mean and median amounts throughout the country. Yes. That the parishes are. Yes. These are for diocesan. This excludes religious order, independent diocesan. So parish subsidy from a parish for for a parish school should take up no more than 35% of the parish's ordinary income. That's another metric that we work on. We have pastors calling us saying, my parish is going to close if we keep this school open and we keep funding it the way that we have been. Okay? Many dioceses, the bishop sets that percent amount. So if you have a set percentage in your diocese, some of you should feel very grateful. We've worked with Catholic schools where 100% of parish ordinary income is going to the school. Not sustainable. Okay? And adversely to that, schools should not expect to receive more than 15% of their operating income from parish investment. All right, I'm going to go through the last two quickly because I know you're going to have more questions than anything. Dawn talked a lot about these, though, so I'll go a little bit more quickly through fundraising, advancement, development, those sorts of things. So in terms of development, we talk a lot, too, about shifting the mindset, especially in our elementary schools. We do a lot of fundraising, as Dawn talked about. These are the events, right? Or we're selling pizzas, or we're selling magazines, or, again, we need to shift that philanthropic mindset into donating and giving because we believe in the mission not because I'm getting something in return. Okay? So annual funds, right? Galas, auctions. Auctions are a little bit on the fence there because you might still be getting something in return, but focusing on, you know, one or two big events a year. That's the other struggle, right? We have donor fatigue. Oh my goodness, every month my kid's school has an event and they're always asking me to give more and more money. So again, having an advancement plan, that's going to help you establish that. The last piece is that endowment. As mentioned, even in all new schools, we work on establishing an endowment from the beginning. So if we can get our cost, revenue structure, and model outlined in a more viable, you'll also notice I didn't really use the word sustainable anymore. That has developed a very negative connotation around the country. When a school is going through a sustainability study, more often than not, it's when the diocese is saying, do we keep them open or do we close them? So we work with schools on strategic planning and then growth and vitality studies. Growth and vitality means you have options and ways to get better. Sustainability is, have you exhausted all efforts before we finally say we cannot turn this around? Okay. Endowment, work in the present for benefit in the future. This is that long-term financial planning model. This is not money that is going to be used right now. That's where things like capital campaigns are established. You have very specific goals, action steps, strategies, certain dollar amount that you need to raise for very specific projects. Your endowment is funding Catholic education for many, many years to come. Percent of their overall revenue that's built, that the endowment covers. Yes. Yes.
What was the recommended percentage for fundraising?
Okay, so if what we look at is tuition income is at least 70. Parish investment should be no more than 15, so I would try to shoot for 10. Your school fundraising would be about 10%. Endowment, 3% is kind of the ideal. I do still believe, though, that again, as we start to shift just how we fund our Catholic schools, that our focus and attention needs to start kind of shifting down that funnel, right? We need to be increasing the percentages that are towards the bottom so that, again, there isn't as much reliance top-heavy.
Just one thing about endowment is remember that's what you can use from the endowment, right? So you have, your endowment has to be bigger so you can take that 3%, whatever the 3% is, matches the dollar amount you need.
Yeah.
Real quick, is school choice embedded in tuition income, or have you not gotten to that yet?
Embedded into tuition income is school choice. Yeah. Yep. The only piece that, and I'll echo what Dawn said before, I struggle a lot when I work with schools and I hear, well, I've heard people state publicly, well, we have school choice. It's never going away. And I just kind of go, hold on. The likelihood of that happening, right? We understand. And there are certain states where it's a little bit more kind of on solid footing than others, but we cannot rely on it and just guarantee forever that it will be present. So, the choice dollars, and Dawn mentioned, I'm in Wisconsin. We have three choice programs in the state of Wisconsin. We have this Wisconsin School Choice, Milwaukee School Choice, and Racine School Choice. They've set tuition, now that we've had it so long, tuition is higher than that voucher amount. And that money is going directly to the school. Guess what they've been able to do with that additional money? Right? That has now offset and counteracted any sort of funding gap that schools have. The phrase that we use also when Dawn talked about transparency, it's what we call doing a state of the school address. You should be doing an annual state of the school address that outlines, again, it aligns with strategic planning. Catholic mission and identity, Catholic culture, what are we doing well? What are some new steps we've taken to increase and strengthen in that area? Academics, are you sharing academic growth data with families? More often than not, our Catholic schools are outperforming our public schools. But we focus so much on we're Catholic, we tend to not market ourselves in the areas that we are actually some of the strongest. looking at faculty and staff. What are their certifications? Post that. Plaster it on your website. Have it on a sign outside that teacher's classroom, whatever you need to do. Enhance your academics. Operational vitality is broken into four sections. It's facilities, it's finance, it's advancement, and it's enrollment. Last is governance and leadership. Be open and honest with your parent communities, your parish communities, on your boards, your school leadership, your parish leadership. Every year you should be updating your families in these areas. Then when you start talking about needing money and why, it's not a shock to them. It's not a, oh my goodness, where did this come from? Or more often than not, a parish or a school is slated to close because of the financial hardships. And what's the first thing parents say? We had no idea. We had no idea it was that bad. Okay?
Yeah, I would love to just add for, you know, when we think about school choice and tuition and our budgets, who's using the school choice vouchers? Have you brought in a number of students who couldn't afford tuition, right? Like, who's using them? If a lot of your students who are using them are from full pay families, the money goes away, you have that backup. It's really looking at what percentage of kids are now coming, students are now coming that are from lower income families who now have access, right? Maybe you're funding the rest of theirs through scholarship money. That's the percentage you really want to pay attention to if the program should go away and how you would make that up.
And that's another metric that we use. The demographic data, not only looking at population projections, school age, race, ethnicity, but it's also, we've developed metrics in affordability and perceptions of affordability based on median family household income. So families that come from lower socioeconomic areas, we have found are willing to invest 4 to 6% of their median household income to tuition for one child. So back to your question, even about multiple children, right? Families that live in more of a kind of middle socioeconomic are willing and able to devote approximately 8 to 10%, pushing upwards of about up to 12% of their family income to tuition for one child. And those that are in kind of a higher, more elite socioeconomic bracket, you can start to get up to about 14% of household income to invest in tuition. But what we have found is that if tuition is 15% or higher, a family doesn't even consider it. It's deemed unaffordable. Okay? So knowing and understanding the demographics, the communities where your families are coming from, plays into what you can charge in terms of tuition, but also, again, are we marketing differently to families that need more financial assistance than we are those who could potentially be full-paying families? We can't just keep sending out our same marketing to every family, every zip code, every feeder school. If it all looks the same, then you're going to get the same response back. How does it come together? Understand your funding model. Understand your revenue shortfalls. Educate your parents and supporters. These are all things we've talked about. Intentionally creating that culture of philanthropy, focusing more on development, funding the mission, not buying the pizza, and create strategic opportunities to ask for support. That goes exactly back to what Dawn said. Oh, why don't you give? Because no one asked me to. It sounds so easy, right? Just do it. Just go out and ask for money and they give. No. All right. I'm going to pause there. An hour is never enough to talk through all of these various areas of parish and school life. But if our number one message, again, we have to think differently about how we fund our Catholic schools.
Well, thank you, Dawn, and thank you, Angela, for a very insightful presentation. We have probably time for two or three questions. Are there questions from?
You talked a lot about changing tuition models, and that's like a two-part question. The first part, how do you justify a possible change from having a school that has a Catholic and a non-Catholic rate to a one rate?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side is that if you do get to that point, what if the other schools around you aren't doing that? How do you?
Great question. My first response to that is every Catholic school today is a regional Catholic school. Again, how they were developed and established, parish, school, parishioner children go to that Catholic school, first and foremost. How many of you can state confidently that every child in your Catholic school comes from only your home parish? None of you. That's my first answer to that. How do we have a parishioner, non-parishioner rate when we are educating students from multiple parishes? If the other schools don't, now, I'll not counter that, but I'll add on to that. This is again then where your parish dollars need to be funded differently. For families that are tithing in your parishes, then those are conversations that as school leader and pastor, you're going to have that conversation with that family and you need to learn and understand that dynamic. So number one, we are educating students in all parishes. And how many of you are seeing an increase in non-Catholic students in your schools? Okay, that trend is going up. We are at a turning point in education where non-Catholics are also very interested in Catholic schools because of many things that are happening in the public school system. So that's my first argument on that. Even though the other schools are not, again, you're not going to price yourself out of the market. And that's where you need to develop a long-term funding model plan, outlining, and it'd be very, very, very transparent with your families. This is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. This is how it impacts you. If you can commit from a parish standpoint that if you increase or get rid of a non-parishioner tuition rate, that your parishioners will still pay the amount that they've been paying, it doesn't matter. But you start a new funding process so that it isn't the expectation when new families come in. And you should always tell your parents from pre-K on what percent your tuition goes up every year from day one.
Thank you. This might be beating a dead horse, but just kind of continuing that. Number one, we've seen where parishes are trying, on the flip side, they're trying to define what makes an active parishioner.
Yes.
Right?
We've seen point systems.
Yes. So this gets rid of that problem, right?
Yes.
And I think you kind of answered this maybe through the one-on-one conversation with school leaders, but have you seen cannibalism towards your offertory when you make a parishioner, non-parishioner rate the same?
No.
Like they stop giving on the offertory side?
No. And that's where, again, if it's a parish school, the school is a ministry of the parish, and this is where just that, again, that financial transparency. Why do you need the money? Right? How many of you even parents are going to say, gosh, I wish we could pay our teachers more? And then you say, great, here's how we can start to do that, right? So these are all that if-then situation scenarios, right? If we do this, here's what it does to our financials. If we do this, here's what it does. So bring them into the conversation and allow for that opportunity of why. Why are you asking for this? But we have not seen any correlation between funding tithing dollars to the parish. People, I tend to hear it more the Catholic, non-Catholic. Not even parishioner, non-parishioner, and that, what we call ecclesial Darwinism, survival of the fittest within our Catholic schools. But why do the non-Catholics get that same tuition rate? Well, this is then where your parish gives the scholarship, the financial aid to reduce the out-of-pocket cost if you're an active parishioner.
Yeah, and I'd also add to that thinking about the conversation you're having on the fundraising side, right? You know, when there's a capital campaign, we're always asking for above and beyond.
Good point.
Operating expenses, right? So you should be having that conversation with your parishioner families. This should be above and beyond what you're giving to the parish, right? That's operating expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And this is operating for the school, or this is an additional opportunity at the school. So it's making sure you're clear in your messaging and you're transparent in your messaging, and then people will give at their capacity to give at different places.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Dawn and Angela. I think it's...
Thank you. Thank you.
I think it's no exaggeration. This conversation is at the heart of the U.S. Church right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Don and Angela are happy to stick around for a few minutes if you have questions. Also,
we're at booth 204 if you'd like to stop by and say hello.
And also, can we see this presentation posted on the Whova app?
Yep.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And finally, encourage everyone to submit a review on the Whova app from this session. It'll help the board and leaders to provide great presentations like this in the future. Thanks for being here.
Great. Thanks, everyone.